The first person to be executed in the colony of Georgia was a woman. In 1734, the indentured servant was tried and convicted alongside a fellow servant for the murder of their master. Centuries later, questions linger over their guilt. Was one forced to participate in the murder to save their own life? Or were the two lovers who carefully planned and carried out the murder? This is the mystery of the murder of William Wise. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. Savannah, Georgia is a city that's known for its beauty and charm. Tourists and locals stroll Savannah's 22 squares each day. The large oaks and the benches along the squares provide a place of peaceful respite and shade in the summer months. Unless you know the countless ghost stories associated with Savannah, when you know the dark history of this place, you experience it in a different light, such as the case with Wright Square, which was originally known as Percival Square. Designed in 1733 and later named for Sir James Wright, Georgia's third colonial governor. Savannah's gorgeous Lutheran Church of the Ascension is located along this square, but the history here is not holy, and it's not for the faint of heart. As is true for many parts of the city, roads and buildings were built on top of burial grounds. Along Wright Square, you would have found one of the first burial grounds in the city, where many were buried after they hanged in Wright Square, once known as the Hanging Square. People who were condemned to die after committing capital crimes would meet their end beneath those oaks, which may explain why some modern-day visitors speak of feeling ill at ease as they walk through Wright Square. Many a man died by hanging here. For some, death would come quickly, but when hanging was instituted here, there was no trap door in use. It was done by rope. The condemned would pray it would end quickly, but occasionally a criminal would linger before they took their final breath. In January of 1735, Alice Riley was hanged in Wright Square, becoming the first woman to be executed in the colony of Georgia. Her crime? Murder. Perhaps Alice and those who hung in Wright Square linger here to continue to oppose their sentence or damn those who sentence them to death. These days, there are countless stories of Alice wandering the square, looking for the child she gave birth to just weeks before she died. Alice Riley's story is so much more than a ghost tale meant to entertain folks on ghost tours. The story of Alice Riley is one of countless men and women who came to America in the late 18th century with a heart full of hope for a better life. But the payment for their passage to the colonies would cost them a higher price than they could imagine and would drive Alice and others to make desperate choices. Whether by her own accord or under duress, Alice's choices would lead to her death under those trees in Wright Square in early 1735. Alice Riley was 15 years old when she arrived in Georgia. We don't know much about her life before she came to the colony, but her circumstances must have been dire, desperate, because the Irish Catholic immigrant agreed to indentured servanthood in Savannah, Georgia. Alice Riley arrived in Savannah in January of 1734. She was a servant the moment she stepped on land in the colony. She worked in the home of Richard Cannon for a short time before she was placed in the home of William Wise, a man who had been labeled by the colony leaders as a man of questionable character. Alice knew her life as a servant would mean hard work, but Alice's situation and the work in the home of William Wise would be more demeaning than she imagined. Maybe Alice's understanding of her contract was limited or was interpreted in a different way by William Wise. That was the complicated part of indentured servanthood in the colonies. PBS's History Detectives investigated indentured servanthood in America and found that the first of these servants arrived here about a decade after the settlement of Jamestown in 1607. As Europe's 30 Years' War ended, countless men and women were left with little hope of work as an economic depression would overtake Europe. As the History Detectives put it, a new life in the New World offered a glimmer of hope, with one half to two thirds of immigrants who came to American colonies arriving as indentured servants. Now, this paints a picture of how gloomy and desperate the situation was for laborers in Europe at the time. They were willing to leave their homes and choose to be servants to try to find a new life in America. A majority of indentured servants were young. They were unmarried men who had some education and the ability to read and some basic labor skills. Those interested in signing up would meet with what was known as a recruiting agent, establish a servanthood resume of sorts, and a deal would then be arranged with an agreement as to the time the person would serve. The general agreement would be about 4 to 5 years, with a bonus of sorts for anyone willing to serve beyond the term. Once the deal was finalized, passage to the colonies would be arranged, along with food, clothing, and shelter. The Georgia Historical Society found that for a servant arriving in the New World, there was a bit of a shock to the system. They were young people who had grown up in large cities in Europe, had never experienced life in the wilderness that settlers had established in the colonies. Their adjustment to the colony where they would work in the New World was known as the seasoning, with many of the servants becoming ill as their bodies adjusted to their new surroundings, especially those who worked in the colonies in the South, where heat and humidity was unlike anything they had experienced in Europe. The conditions were extreme and hard to bear for those of means who came to America, but the conditions for servants, well, they were even harder. They would be forced to take on the hard labor and the task their masters did not want to bear, working from sunrise to sunset. And masters doled out harsh punishment to servants who were technically protected by the law, but enforcement of those laws would vary depending on the colony. To be clear, indentured servanthood was not slavery. If a servant made it to the end of their term, the deal they had bartered in exchange for servanthood would usually end with that person receiving a predetermined freedom package, which often included land and supplies in their colony. But until they completed their term of service, these servants had to agree that they wouldn't marry, could not own land, and were barred from engaging in any commercial pursuit outside of the work they carried out for their master. In time, the cost of this system would lead to the growing demand for slave labor in America. The indentured servanthood system didn't completely end with slavery, but it did experience a significant decline in the colonies. But it was servanthood that brought Alice Riley to Georgia, that led to her home in the work of William Wise, and eventually to her hanging in Wright Square. William Wise had arrived in Savannah in 1733. According to the Georgia Historical Society, in June of that year, Wise applied for passage to the colony at the expense of the trustees, a group in England who would evaluate people who wanted to go to Georgia. Now, Wise did not impress these men, who seemed to question his character and his finances. They weren't convinced Wise had the means to pay for his own passage and then pay for servants and land once he arrived in the colony. He was placed on the charitable list for consideration and was granted passage in September of 1733, arriving in Savannah that December. What Wise did not know when he arrived in Georgia was that the trustees back in England had written to the founder of the Georgia colony, James Oglethorpe, informing him that they learned new information. And based on that information, they were reversing their decision to grant William Wise entry into Georgia. This decision came about because William Wise had set sail for Georgia with a woman he had passed off to the trustees as his wife, with marriage being a requirement to sail. In truth, the woman was a prostitute Wise had paid to make the journey with him. The trustees tried to get word to ports to prevent Wise from sailing to Georgia, but it was too late. they were disturbed by Wise's deception and worried that he would cause trouble once he reached Georgia. They wrote to Oglethorpe that Wise should not be allowed to settle in Georgia. They asked that he be sent back at their expense. We don't know if Oglethorpe received that letter from the trustees. All we know is that William Wise landed in Savannah, headed to Hutchinson's Island, and established his new life as a cattle farmer. By February of 1734, Alice Raleigh was working in the home of William Wise, along with a fellow Irish Catholic indentured servant, Richard White. How these two came to work in Wise's home isn't clear. It's possible Wise purchased them and gained their contract term of service in his home. Another theory, that Wise borrowed the two to help him in his time of need. After he had arrived in Georgia, William Wise became very ill. We don't know details of his illness other than it led to Wise being bedridden and needing constant care. Care provided by Alice Riley and Richard White. Richard White arrived in Savannah around the same time as Alice Riley. The two were familiar with one another, as were all servants in the colony. There have been countless stories and newspaper accounts that depict Alice Riley and Richard White as sweethearts, possibly common law spouses. This is a legend that was birthed out of the two committing a crime together and the sensational news stories about their crime and eventual hanging. Julie Ann Sweet is a professor of history at Baylor University. She studies colonial Georgia, and in 2012, the Georgia Historical Society published her research on the Alice Riley case. Sweet notes that the theory of Alice Riley and Richard White being lovers is impossible to confirm or deny, but if they had established a romantic relationship as servants, they could not marry until they reached the end of their term of indenture. Both were Irish Catholic, meaning if the two were engaged in a romantic relationship in 18th century Georgia, they did so knowing it was without religious sanction. What we know for sure, Alice and Richard worked in Wise's home day after day. They covered all the normal household chores and had additional duties as caretakers for William Wise, who was not known as a kind or a patient man. William Wise wasn't a respected addition to the colony when he arrived in 1733. He had proven himself to be of questionable character and was known to have been rather harsh with his servants and abusive. Each day, young Alice Riley would be called to William Wise's room, ordered to bring him a pail of bathing water and to assist with his grooming. Alice, who was now about 16 years old, was forced to not only bathe her master, but groom him. She had to pick crumbs from his beard and comb the lice from his often matted and greasy hair. William Wise would lay down and lean out on the bed to make his head and his locks more accessible to his servant so she could clean and brush him. All the while, William Wise was said to have demeaned Alice with abusive language and acts, making sexual advances, and in time, assaulting Alice Riley. Each day, there would come a moment when William Wise was in a vulnerable position, the moment he would lie down for his grooming. On the morning of March 1st, 1734, just 6 weeks after Alice Riley and Richard White began working in the home of William Wise, the two entered his room. Richard carried the pail of bathwater. Alice entered the room behind him. Hours later, William Wise was found murdered, lying on his bed with his head in a pail of water. Now, the legend of Alice Riley says what happened that day was the result of a demeaning and harsh master and servants who refused to take it anymore. On that March morning in 1734, William Wise called for his bathing water. Once it was brought into his room, Wise did what he always did. He leaned his head back into the bucket of water for hair washing. At that moment, it's believed Richard White strangled William Wise with a handkerchief as Alice Riley held William's head underwater in his bathing pail until he was dead. Once the deed was done, Richard and Alice fled the home. They hid from the law for a short time, but they would be found soon, and quickly brought to trial. There's no surviving transcript of the trials of Alice Riley and Richard White. We know the two stood trial on May 11th, 1734, and the trial would end soon after with Alice and Richard being convicted of murder and sentenced to hang for the murder of William Wise. It seems not everyone in the colony was convinced that Alice Riley was a willing participant in the murder of William Wise. Thomas Christie was the Savannah town recorder. He attended the trials so he could deliver a report to the trustees back in England. Christie refers to Alice Riley as an accessory in the murder of William Wise, not as one who helped plan the murder. Christie claimed that Alice Riley's actions were carried out under the influence of Richard White. This does make it sound as though Alice Riley may have felt threatened by more than one man in the William Wise home, abused and threatened by her master, and possibly ordered to help murder him. Perhaps Alice Riley knew what Richard White was capable of and did not want to be his next victim. Thomas Christie did not paint Alice Riley as an innocent woman, owning that she participated somehow in the murder of William Wise. But the question will always linger as to whether or not she was given the impossible choice of taking a life to save her own life. That's one theory, but there are so many unknowns and so many questions around the murder of William Wise. Questions such as what would Alice Riley and Richard White gain from planning the murder? Murdering their master would not be a path to freedom from the system of servanthood. Had they planned the murder, carried it out, gotten away with it, they just would have been moved into the home of another member of the colony to work as servants until their indenture term came to an end. And it was possible they could have ended up in the home of someone who treated them even worse than William Wise. There is another theory that could explain how William Wise ended up murdered. There were, of course, rumors about the colony that William Wise abused his servants. In the case of Alice Riley, Wise was said to have taken advantage of the young girl and sexually assaulted her. Even if Richard White and Alice Riley were not romantically involved, the two shared a bond in their service and the abuse suffered at the hands of their master. Perhaps William Wise was acting inappropriately towards Alice Riley on the morning of March 1st, 1734, perhaps trying to assault her. And Richard White decided William Wise's days of abusing and taking advantage of Alice were over. Alice Riley would proclaim her innocence over and over again, and so would Richard White. As Julianne Sweet has pointed out in her research of Alice Riley's life, what little evidence that exists from the trial wouldn't make it to trial today. It would all be considered hearsay. No one saw Alice Riley or Richard White murder William Wise. It's possible someone else murdered Wise, knowing his servants would be accused of the crime and likely hang for it. Alice and Richard were Irish Catholic, and prejudice against the Irish was prevalent in the colonies, as Julianne Sweet notes in her examination of indentured servanthood and anti-Irish prejudice in early Georgia. The English and Irish were known for their complicated and at times violent relationship. During the 16th century reign of Elizabeth I, English Protestants invaded Ireland. By 1688, the British Parliament removed James II, who was Catholic, and replaced him with William of Orange, a Protestant. James was supported by Irish Catholics, who wanted him to retain power. That support led to the British enforcing laws that discriminated against Catholics. Now, the tension between English Protestants and Irish Catholics was alive and well in the colonies, and Protestants in Georgia feared Catholic members of the colony would support and even help bring about an invasion by Spanish Florida. Catholics in the colony were viewed as poor and lowly members of society. Alice Riley and Richard White, being Irish Catholic, was mentioned by colony leaders as an explanation as to why they would murder anyone on the colony, specifically William Wise, who was Protestant. Religious and political differences were at play in Georgia, and that could have driven someone to frame the Irish servants for murder or assume Alice Riley and Richard White had committed the crime. If that seems far-fetched, consider this. the prejudice against Irish Catholics in the colony could explain why Alice Riley received no mercy, even after the town recorder wrote the trustees in England that he did not believe she was an active participant in the murder of William Wise. We'll never know the real story of this murder. We only know the fate of the two accused. The sentence handed down in May of 1734 was hanging in Wright Square. It was to be swift, but an unexpected twist in the court shocked observers. Alice Riley pled her belly. Alice Riley was pregnant. She received a reprieve until she delivered the baby. We don't know the exact reasons, but Robert White was also given a reprieve, remaining in jail for months before his execution. Alice Riley delivered a baby boy she named James on December 21st, 1734. Julie Sweet's research mentions an important point. Alice Riley did not know she was pregnant when William Wise was murdered, or so it seems. It's possible she was pregnant at the time, but didn't know she was carrying what some believe to be Richard White's baby, or possibly a child that was the result of an assault at the hands of William Wise. Alice Riley's child postponed her date with death, but as she held her baby boy in his first 2 weeks of life, Alice knew she would soon leave this world. Arrangements were made for a family to adopt James, and Alice's date with death was set. On January 19th, 1735, Alice Riley was taken to Wright Square to be hanged. Hangings were public events meant to show the strength of the justice system and deter crime in the colony. A large crowd gathered to see Alice face her final moments. With a noose around her neck, Alice Riley once again proclaimed her innocence. And then silence as she hung for the crime of murder. Alice Riley was left hanging on the gallows for 3 days. The following day, Robert White was delivered to the gallows, where he too was executed for the murder of William Wise. Alice Riley was the first person to be executed in the colony of Georgia. She's said to be seen in Wright Square from time to time, searching for her baby James. Occasionally, women will hear the spirit of Alice crying for her son, or see a woman dressed in rags that look as though they're 18th century style clothes. The woman often appears on January 19th, frantically searching for her baby. Now, police will occasionally be called to Wright Square. They'll arrive on scene and learn that a woman was heard screaming and searching for a baby. Officers always check it out, but they know if it's January 19th, and suddenly the woman can't be found by the person who called for help, it must be the spirit of Alice Riley. They know what no one can tell Alice now. Alice was reunited with her baby boy in death. Her baby James died just 2 weeks after his mother was executed. The two were buried side by side, not far from Wright Square. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. There are so many layers to the mystery of the murder of William Wise and Alice Riley's story. Check the sources for this episode in the show notes, including Julie Ann Sweet's publication, The Murder of William Wise, An Examination of Indentured Servanthood, Anti-Irish Prejudice and Crime in Early Georgia. You can find the full show notes and catch up on previous episodes at southernmysteries.com. And I'm excited to share with you that you can finally shop for Southern Mysteries merchandise when you visit the website. There's a link in the show notes, and you can tap on the shop tab at southernmysteries.com to buy t-shirts, coffee mugs, and more. Thanks for supporting the show. And thanks, as always, for subscribing and listening to Southern Mysteries.